It may not have been their proudest moment on the field, but more than a few baseball players have found themselves involved in a bench-clearing brawl. It usually happens after your pitcher drills an opponent in the ribs, their pitcher fires one high and tight, the batter charges the mound, both dugouts erupt, even the bullpen's empty. Doug Glanville, who played for the Cubs, Phillies, and Rangers in his major league career, has been writing a guest column for the New York Times during the 2008 baseball season. His latest column took us inside the mob and the mostly unwritten rules of base brawling. He joins us today from member station WBEZ in Chicago. Nice to have you on the program today.
Oh, it's great to be here. I appreciate it.
And now we're not condoning displays of temper, and we know you're probably too ashamed to call us, but if you have participated in a memorable bench-clearing brawl, tell us your regrets. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And you can also fess up on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Doug, once upon a time, it was your noggin that was the target of that high and tight fastball.
Oh, yeah. I've been there a few times. And I think that year was the year in the minor leagues that they instituted a strong fine system because I think we got into about 9 fights that season. So it was a little getting out of hand. And I was definitely in the fray quite a bit of it.
And in that particular case, as you write in your column, it followed a bunch of home runs by your team, and the other pitcher was getting a little bit frustrated.
Yeah, you could actually, usually when you're, you know, on the field, you can see it happening. You could see it unfold in front of your eyes, and I could tell he was frustrated, and then the hitter before me hit a home run. So that was the icing on the cake, and at the time, I was pinch hitting for our pitcher, who they weren't very happy with since he had hit a few other guys on their team. So you could see it coming. I gave my teammates a warning, hoping that they would have my back, and they didn't really actually believe me, but I certainly charged as soon as it went at my head and ended up at the bottom of some pile of humanity.
What entered your mind as you were on that race out to the pitcher's mound?
You know, one thing I noticed is a lot of times in these fights, people take their helmet off, and I never really got that. Like, I don't know if they want to, you know, their hair to be on TV or what's going on, but I took my helmet and kept it on my head. So I charged him out, and I think he took a swing, hit my helmet, didn't even feel it. And, you know, I just tried to do the best I could. But pretty soon I was at the bottom of a lot of guys in a full Nelson. So yeah, I didn't really do much after that.
And it most of the time when these fights erupt, most of the time, it seems like the guys on the opposite teams, well, they all run out on the field to back their teammate, but they don't necessarily do anything.
Yeah, they kind of get out there, and I think it's like one of those things, halfway through you have this epiphany, like, wait a minute, what am I doing exactly? And I haven't thrown a punch in my life, or, you know, I don't know karate or whatever it is. So I think you realize somewhere in there that you don't really want to fight, and your body is the tools of your trade, so you don't want to get hurt. So you end up kind of posturing, holding someone back, and, you know, maybe clearing the pile out and just sort of watching.
Well, these days when players change teams a lot, you may know somebody on the other side. It might be a friend of yours or a former teammate. And is there sort of this unwritten agreement, I'll grab your arm, you grab mine, and we'll just dance a little bit?
Yeah, that's true. You do find guys, and then, you know, maybe you're about to take a swing, and you look up, and that was your roommate 3 years ago. I mean, you know, you don't want to take this guy out. So, you know, in fact, in that fight that we had in Orlando, the coach was staying at the hotel where my parents were staying at. So I went to pick my parents up, and I walk in the elevator, and there's their coach. And he had shiners, black eyes, knots in his head. And he was like, well, I didn't really want to hurt you, Glanville. I know we hit you, but, you know, it's no big deal. I said, well, you know, those are the rules, so you just have to play by them.
Those are the rules. This was in minor league ball where you're the instigator. But in major league baseball, you can go home and watch yourself on TV later that night on Baseball Tonight.
Exactly. So, you know, when people try to tell these tall tales about I did this in the pile and you see how I body flipped this guy, you know, you look on the video and you're like, that's not really the case. So, you know, you can be very much you can very quickly impeached in this process. So people are very aware of that.
Let's see if we can get some callers on the line. Again, we're talking about bench-clearing brawls in baseball with former Major League ballplayer Doug Glanville, who's writing a guest column for the New York Times this baseball season. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And James is on the line. James calling us from Newark in Delaware.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you for having Mr. Glanville on. I do remember when he played for our Phillies and remember him as an old-school scrappy player. And I just wanted to say that I have, in high school and in college intramural sports, have been involved in several brawls or fights in baseball and in different sports as well.
And is it a moment of temporary insanity, do you think, James?
I think that's part of it. I think I was actually, my ears perked up when I heard you mention before Mr. Glanville came on about unwritten rules that part of it is the way that the game used to be played. There were things that you were allowed to do, and there are things that you were not allowed to do. And if you were, you know, up by quite a few runs and you were just rubbing it into the other team, you know, they would let you know through their actions that there were things that you were not supposed to be doing, and there was a gentlemanly way to play the game. And I think that a lot of sports, you know, several sports, such as the way baseball used to be played before they started handing out suspensions like they do now, and ice hockey, I think that people fail to realize sometimes that that this was the way that the game is self-regulated, that people stay the way that they play fair with each other and the way that they act professionally is sometimes exhibited by, you know, I guess physical violence.
I was going to say, so the way to enforce the gentlemanly rules of the game is to chuck one into the guy's ribs?
Well, Mr. Glanville would certainly have more thoughts on that than me because he's played a lot more years than I, but he would tell you that usually a lot of these things are for, you know, throwing at a player or whatever is for a reason. They don't just do it because they're angry. They do it because of something a lot of times that the other team did to embarrass them. And it's kind of a level of professionalism that I think they try and uphold that sometimes some people don't adhere to anymore.
Is that right, Doug?
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think it's a policing mechanism. And I think the idea that you know that may happen kind of keeps you in line to think about, wait a minute, we're winning by 10 runs and it's the ninth inning and I'm going to steal second base and rub it in their face. You'll think twice about it when, you know, you're about to get hit in the back, you know. So I think that's part of it. Even when Roger Clemens came over to the National League, all of a sudden he had to hit and he had to grab a bat. So it's a little different when you're hitting people in the back and all of a sudden you, as a pitcher, you have to step up in the lineup. So, you know, these things people think about and it does help police the game.
Thanks very much for the call, James.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. We're talking with Doug Glanville about the unwritten rules of the game of baseball. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And you say, you know, people do it because they're embarrassed. Every time I see Manny Ramirez hit a home run, he stands there at home plate and admires it. Isn't that supposed to be dissing the pitcher?
That is. Well, I'll tell you what. See, there are some untouchables to some degree. Now, they know, whoever's playing against Manny Ramirez knows that if you do hit Manny as a retaliation, everybody in their lineup's going to get hit. So it's, you have to decide and pick your spots. Like certain guys you have to be careful with because it's their star player, and if you hurt them, they'll be out of action and it will hurt their team. So you do know certain players is somewhat untouchable, although people will try you.
Let's get Dan on the line, and Dan's calling us from Wisconsin.
Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
I always kind of enjoyed the unwritten rule in hockey where the two perpetrators were allowed to be isolated and trade some blows, and nobody else. I mean, sure, there's the occasional bench-clearing brawl, but it's usually the two perpetrators. I guess I always wondered why in baseball they never let the pitcher and the batter go at it and trade a few punches and see who comes out on top.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, that would be interesting if they kind of put a bull circle around them, like a little ring, and see what happens. But I think they're certainly afraid of a lot of things escalating. Even in baseball, it might be a lot easier to get onto the field and the madness ensues. But, you know, that could be something to change it up. I think once people realize that they can't actually really fight for the most part, you know, you might think twice about getting into that circle.
Well, as I understand it, when, you know, the batter charges the mound, and generally the catcher charges right after him to try to protect his pitcher, and then the batter's team says, oh, it's nine guys, they have nine guys in the field, and it's just our one guy, and so they go out to, and then the bullpen's empty, and everybody's there.
Oh, yeah. So, no, it's a snowball effect. It starts, and then everybody's getting out there. Now, the catcher's got to protect his pitcher, so he's trying to catch you with all this gear on. Odds are he's not going to, but usually after you take one punch, the catcher's on you instantaneously. So, you know, they have a lot of rules about who gets protected. And the thing about baseball also is it's the endlessness of the grudge. Like, you may beat up someone that day, but you're going to play this team 15 more times. They're going to see you in the parking lot or whatever. I mean, I've seen a guy literally wait for the pitcher in the parking lot.
Really?
After a game. So, you know, they don't forget. So that's the other aspect. You can get into that ring of fire, so to speak, but it doesn't end there. It doesn't end until you pretty much hang up your spikes.
Thanks very much, Dan. Let's see if we can go to Mike. And Mike's with us from Dublin, Ohio.
Right. Well, mine was my favorite story was back when I was in the Navy and we were playing the Venezuelan Navy down in Puerto Rico. And we weren't allowed to win the ball games that we played. The brass would tell us, make a good show of it, but if you're going to win, make sure you lose. So we were sitting there. We actually got ahead quite a bit, and so we started kind of blowing plays and things and letting them catch up. And eventually it got even, but then they pretty much fouled out straight back to the pitcher. So then it was our last time up, and they were giving us a hard time about it. And we had been plying the umpire with a few beers along the way, and we knew that the umpire was a little bit shaky. So we had one out, and there was a guy on there was nobody on, and the guy comes up to bat, and so he devises his plan. One of the guys goes up and talks like he's talking to the third base coach, and then almost just kind of steps on to third base, and the next guy hits a ground ball, and they throw to second for the out, and the guy from third, who wasn't really there, ran home, and the umpire called him safe and said we'd won the game. And needless to say, the Venezuelans didn't take too kindly to that. So,
yeah, that's definitely brawl material right there.
I would think so. That, of course, that was the days when Venezuela was an ally.
That's true. And that's also, it was not till we got back to the boat that we found out we were in big trouble.
Yeah, that might have changed the diplomatic landscape of that day.
Yeah, it's one thing for a major league ball player to get a fine or suspended. I guess it's another that gets thrown into the brig.
That's right.
Mike, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
You bet.
And Doug Glanville, did anything ever ensue from any of your brawls? Did you get fined ever?
Oh, I did, actually. Well, the one I described in the article where I charged the mound and you know, after the guy threw it at my head, I got a $35 fine back then. And I got a letter from the commissioner of the league. And actually, he was sort of joking about it. He's like, yeah, you're a good player. Yeah, no big deal. Just don't do this again. Don't even worry about it. But I guess it's a credit that they throw at you because they're thinking about you. So he didn't really seem to care at the time. But then it did get out of hand the second half of the season. And they ended up cracking down. And it ended up 3 days suspension without pay. And then a fine, so guys can afford that. So they were like, "Forget it, we won't be fighting too much more."
Doug Glanville, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
I appreciate being on.
Doug Glanville writes a guest column for the New York Times. You can find a link to it on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. He was with us today from the studios of our member station in Chicago, WBEZ. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.